Hello, everybody, and welcome to Three and Out. I'm your host, Cole Simmons. Today, we're going to be looking at three different topics, two of them off-season related, One of them will be draft related. The first thing we'll do is check out the Raiders off-season maneuvers, because they've been taking a lot of flack in the media, a lot of flack from their own fan base in terms of who they've signed, who they haven't signed, and who they've let go to free agency. Then we'll take a look at the Carolina Panthers and check out what I think is a very baffling offseason in terms of giving Cam Newton a lot of weapons to work with. They've gone completely opposite and just removed all of them in what seems to be a play to make him cheaper next offseason. And then finally, we'll take a look at the quarterbacks in the upcoming NFL draft, because there's a lot of interesting things when you don't have a number one guy like a Cam Newton or an Andrew Luck that's available in this draft. And I think this one is one in which we're going to see a lot of different opinions on who's going to be taken not only first, but also in the first round, and even some of the later ones that I think might even be really good steals. Let's start first and 10 here with the Oakland Raiders and the offseason they had. I think I'd like to start with a recognition of the transition period that the Raiders have undergone in the last couple seasons. The new GM, this is now his second year, is Reggie McKenzie, who came from the Green Bay Packers organization, which is an organization that doesn't usually overspend in free agency, builds to the draft, good model franchise. And he's come into Oakland at a time when they're moving from Al Davis, who was essentially the GM and the owner and the president and all those other things, kind of like Jerry Jones is in Dallas. You've moved from him to this now more modern corporate structure of an NFL franchise. And it's been a tough transition because you had a lot of players with some bloated contracts that were guys Al Davis liked. I'm thinking of Darius Heyward-Bey, Rolando McClain, Michael Huff, guys that were good, not great. And the fact that a lot of them haven't really stuck with other franchises, particularly Michael Huff went to the Ravens, was cut early in the season. Darius Heyward-Bey, 1 year with Indianapolis, now in Pittsburgh on a tryout contract. These are guys that weren't really suited for a successful organization. And McKenzie, to his credit, recognized this, got rid of all of them, and then he suffered this kind of cap storm where I think last year he had about 50% of his overall cap, maybe $60 million, in dead money players. So when you're looking at the number that they have now, that $70 million in free cap, the room to sign players, I think that you need to recognize how much work has gone into that in terms of going from an over-the-cap situation when he came in to this giant room, and how last year they may have been the least talented roster on the in the entire NFL. I know the Jaguars were 0-11, but I think the Raiders probably had less to work with than them. And you're listening to Three and Out with Cole Simmons as we're talking about the Raiders offseason. And I think we'll start with the offensive line and what they've done to shore that up. Pro Football Focus, really good website if you like reading about players and how teams are constructed and who's good, who's bad. They do a breakdown of the projected lineup for the Raiders next season. And I think that when you look at the offensive line in particular, it's just not pretty. You got Menelik Watson, who is a drafted tackle. I think they think of him as a left tackle, which is, I think that goes into why they didn't want to pay for Veld here, because I think they thought Menelik Watson is going to be their guy for the future. I still would have signed Veld here because I think he's a very good left tackle. I think he solves your problem at least for 5 years there. Now they're kind of in flux. Even if you have Menelik Watson, though, you really don't have a lot to work with. Wisniewski was a second-round draft pick, the first one of McKenzie's era. He looks like a keeper at center, but beyond that, there's not a lot to go with. McKenzie thus far has signed Austin Howard. He's a tackle from the Jets. He signed him to a 5-year deal, and I like that signing because he's a 27-year-old guy. You're getting him in the prime of his career. You know he's a good blocker. He's a good run blocker. He's okay in the pass, but is an improvement over what you had before. You also signed Kevin Booth, who's an ex-Giant. Both him and Howard are both very durable guys. The last two seasons, they started every game, so you're not concerned about those two positions in terms of getting a lot of depth behind them. You can draft guys and kind of groom them and get them ready, particularly with Booth, because Booth's a little bit older. And then you also signed Donald Penn, who I think is going to be the guy that takes the left tackle job for the moment and is the insurance policy if Menelik Watson doesn't turn out okay. So now when you're looking at this line, I think it's really improved from where it was last season. You have Penn and Howard penciled in at the tackle slots, and I think that with Watson developing, you have the capability of putting him at one of them if he's ready to go and sliding Howard in as guard. And if that's the case, you have a five-man line right there. Otherwise, you just got to draft a guard, or you still have time to sign another one. But I think that their line is much improved. It's going to help their running game. It's going to help their quarterback play. You won't have Pryor running around back there. You have Schaub, who's basically a statue, but when he has time, he's proven he's a good quarterback. He has 3,000-4,000-yard seasons in the last five. And I think that the Raiders are obviously assuming that last year was an aberration in terms of his production. So I think that their focus really needs to be on protecting him, because if he can get the ball downfield to James Jones, their recent signing, I think that team's going to be a lot better. And we'll cover that in just a second. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was defensive ends and linebackers, because they spent a lot of money bringing in a couple of veteran guys like Lamar Woodley, Justin Tuck, Antonio Smith. They're all two-year contracts because they're all older. And some of the criticism has been that they're trying to inflate the win total so that they can kind of buy more time for Reggie McKenzie. I think that that's not looking at the big picture here, because they clearly can't draft an entire team, which is almost what they need to do at this point. They only have 8 picks, so you got to add some veteran talent somewhere, and I think they've chosen the defensive side as the place to add the talent. They can draft some guys that they can groom behind these pass rushers. I've heard Khalil Mack rumored to the Raiders at 5 in a couple of places, and I think he'd be great to learn from behind Lamar Woodley for a year or two. So you have these stopgap kind of guys that are talented. They're going to give you some production. They're going to make your team better right now, but they also give you some time to find younger players to fit in that slot. I don't understand why they didn't sign Lamar Houston. I definitely would have, but at least you've added more talent to a team that really was just pitiful in terms of its overall talent. And we'll use that to segue into our second down here on 3 and out with Cole Simmons by talking about receivers, because I think the Raiders and the Panthers are going in opposite directions on that. The Raiders, we're going to go into next year with Rod Streeter, Denarius Moore, and Andre Holmes, which I didn't think scared any AFC West team. So the addition of James Jones is really nice in terms of giving them some production and a good deep threat to kind of stretch that defense. He's had double-digit 20-yard or more receptions in the last 3 seasons. So you know he's got a capability of taking the lid off of the defense, and that's going to help Matt Schaub kind of ease some pressure, as well as the running game. I'd like them to get a tight end so that they can maximize that potential. Meanwhile, the Panthers, on the other hand, seem to be doing everything they can to destroy what was at least a capable receiving group, if not an elite one. You had Brandon LaFell as a free agent. You had Ted Ginn as a free agent. You had Dominic Hickson as a free agent. All 3 of them are gone. And then your one reliable guy who's been there his entire career, Steve Smith, was cut for a cap casualty that I don't know if they necessarily needed to do, and we'll talk about the reasons for that in a second. But essentially, every receiver that caught a pass from Cam Newton last year is not on the team this year. And I think that a lot of people don't appreciate the level of chemistry that needs to happen between a quarterback and receiver in terms of some of the nuances of the game, in terms of where they want the ball, in terms of how fast they run, those sorts of things. Even pre-snap, having communication so that you know if somebody's going to cut something deep or cut something off when they see a coverage they like. The Panthers now have basically Greg Olsen as their primary receiver who has any familiarity with Cam Newton. So if you're a fantasy owner for Greg Olsen, buy now, because he's all he's got. So when you're looking at this receiving group, which has only added Jericho Cotchery and Tyquan Underwood at this point, I don't think you're going to be very afraid of them in terms of beating you deep. Underwood's fast, but he's just so raw in terms of his route running that I don't think that any team is going to be petrified to leave him one-on-one on the outside. I think that what's going to happen is that defenses are going to challenge the Panthers. They're going to move people into the box, which is going to hurt the running game. And I think it's also going to hurt Cam Newton's ability to make plays outside of a traditional NFL pocket concept. I think that Newton prefers to see 2 safeties dropping back significantly. ESPN Stats and Info reported that over the last 3 seasons, no quarterback has been sacked or hit while throwing or running more than Cam Newton. And I think that that's going to increase even, because there's not going to be that weapon that's going to pull defenders away from him. And it's going to make it a lot more restrictive in terms of what he can do outside of the pocket. What's really kind of baffling to me is what they've done with Greg Hardy. I think that while he's a really good defensive end, and I think he was a big part of their success this last season, they're spending a lot of money right now at one position. Greg Hardy got a franchise tag number at $13 million, and that is paired with Charles Johnson, who they signed to a long-term deal recently. His number this year is $16.4 million. So now you have $29.5 million spent on one position, whereas you have almost no money spent at your receiver position. And I am a proponent of defense wins championships, but I think that you need to have a balanced attack. Even some of the best defenses, you're looking at the 2000 Ravens, Trent Dilfer came on and actually provided them enough of an offensive spark combined with Jamal Lewis to get them to the championship. Same with the Seahawks last year. You have Russell Wilson and receivers that make enough plays that you can get there. The Panthers, I don't see anyone on that team that can really get them over that hump of being able to succeed. And when you consider that they lost their best tackle in Gross to retirement this year, I think that they're going to be in for a very long season because they're not going to be able to run the ball. They're not going to have anyone for Cam Newton to make plays with. And unless their defense is scoring at a rate that the 2000 defense of the Baltimore Ravens could do, I can't see this team really making a significant impact in the playoff picture. And I think I'll use that as our transition into third down here, where I want to talk about the quarterbacks coming up in the 2014 NFL draft, because I think it's a fascinating look at preferences in terms of quarterbacks. This draft reminds me a lot of the 2011 draft. And I say that because I think there wasn't a real big consensus in terms of who was the best player available. If you remember that draft, you had a lot of people talking about Marcell Dareus as one of the best players, and they were going to take him first overall, and that shifted a lot really late. But you remember the Panthers falling in love with Cam Newton. And so we'll start third down here by putting this draft in context of the 2011 draft, because I think they're very similar in terms of level of talent. In the 2011 draft, you had Cam Newton was the eventual top overall quarterback and the top player taken, but going into the draft, there wasn't that consensus that he was the best one. He actually rose up among NFL evaluators and became that position. In that draft, you had Jake Locker, you had Blaine Gabbert, you had Christian Ponder as other quarterbacks that we're talking about, and I remember Jake Locker being, oh, he's going to be first overall, and then maybe he's going to fall out of the first round. He ends up going eighth, you had Gabbert going 10th, and you have Ponder going 12th. When you look at this year's draft, I think you have a very similar situation where you don't see somebody running away with the top pick like an Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin. I know he went 2, but I think any other draft he would have been the number one. And when you look at Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater and Blake Bortles and even Derek Carr is getting some love as a top 10 talent, I think that you're going to see teams start to value certain preferences in their quarterbacks over other ones. In that respect, I think of the Minnesota Vikings as one of the better examples of a team that's going to have certain preferences over others. Knowing what Norv Turner prefers in his quarterbacks, he likes the big-armed guys, he likes people that can deliver the ball accurately from the pocket as opposed to that kind of mobile quarterback that can get outside the pocket and make plays. So in that light, I would think that Johnny Manziel with his kind of improv skills is not going to be as valuable to the Vikings as, say, Blake Bortles. I think Derek Carr and Zach Mettenberger in particular, is probably the prototypical Norv Turner quarterback. However, he had an ACL tear, so there may be some question about whether or not they want to go that route. That being said, I think that because they signed Matt Cassel, that gives them the option to take him in the second or third round, or wherever they see the value as being. When it comes to looking at the top quarterbacks in this draft, I think the consensus right now is that Teddy Bridgewater, Johnny Manziel, Blake Bortles, and Derek Carr are the four guys most likely to go in the first round. I think that of the four of them, I like Teddy Bridgewater probably the most because I like the accuracy he provides. I know there's some concerns about whether or not his arm is elite or just very good, and that doesn't bother me that much. I think that when you have a good enough arm to make those out throws, the sideline to sideline kind of things, that you're good enough to play in the NFL, and accuracy becomes more important than being able to fire the ball 80 yards downfield. I think that Blake Bortles is probably the most likely to go first overall because he has the highest upside. And when you think about a coach like Bill O'Brien, who has some proven quarterback coaching ability, he's after all responsible for Matt McGloin, that he's going to be more inclined to take somebody who has a higher upside, thinking and believing that he can get the most out of him. when you look at Derek Carr, I think that teams that are more inclined to value strong arm and physical presences are going to like him more. He isn't 6'5", you know, that Joe Flacco, Matt Stafford kind of size. He's only 6'2", but his arm strength is second to none. I mean, he can get the ball downfield in a hurry, and he can go probably about 70 yards in the air. So teams with preference on strong arm quarterbacks are going to like him more than other teams. But when you look at his game film, he throws a lot of screens and deep balls. That's pretty much his whole range. I don't see a lot of that out route, that curl, that crossing in the middle. His accuracy is what I question. And I think in today's NFL game, you have to have that kind of accuracy to really succeed. And so when you're considering Johnny Manziel, you have to look at the combination, but also factor in his mobility, because he clearly is the most mobile of all the quarterbacks in this draft class. The things he does with his leg are just mind-boggling. And I remember watching the Alabama game where he basically broke three sacks and just hurled up a Hail Mary, which would have been picked off 1,000 times in the NFL, and yet it still gets completed to Mike Evans, who we'll save for another day. I think that Manziel, what you're going to value is his ability to do things when everything breaks down, and that inevitably happens in the NFL. When your pocket protection just collapses around you, when receivers run the wrong routes, when something goes wrong, Johnny Manziel is going to shine. So how much is that going to be valuable to you? And when you hear what Ron Jaworski says about how he wouldn't take him in the third round because he doesn't do enough out of the pocket, and then you hear Greg Cosell say, oh, he can't throw the route when it's open, it's got to be really open, which it's never going to be in the NFL, those are concerns for you. I think you can coach those out of him, but now you're working with a limited physical skill set in terms of size, and you're working with somebody who's going to fall back to his old habits, kind of like Vic did early in his career, where he wants to get outside the pocket more than he wants to stay in the pocket. So it becomes an evaluation about how much you can live with, how much you can deal with, which is why I think a lot of teams are going to be all over the board when it comes to these quarterbacks, and why the first round is going to be just fascinating to see. You know, someone's going to fall. Let's put it that way. I think that Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, Johnny Manziel are the most likely. I think Bortles was probably a lock at the top 10 or 5 at this point. One of those three, if not more, slips probably to the 20s and someone trades back in, or maybe the Browns take him with their second pick. But it's going to be fascinating to watch that all play out. And that'll bring us to our fourth segment here, which is a question and answer. Our first question comes from Kurt in Maryland. He asked, why Matt Schaub instead of a younger player? And I think that you can't preclude that the Raiders won't be drafting a quarterback in this draft just because they took Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub is basically on a one-term deal. His $8 million salary is guaranteed for this year, but beyond that, it's not. So I don't think that we'll be seeing a hesitancy to take a quarterback later just because they've already signed Matt Schaub. I think he's more of a stopgap player for them. Our second question comes from Andrew in Washington, D.C., who asked why the running back position seems to be so devalued and depreciated in today's NFL. And I think that there's a misconception that running back is like a dime a dozen. I think that what's important to note is whether or not you have a franchise running back, kind of in the same way as you have a franchise quarterback. So in that light, I think Adrian Peterson is what I would consider a franchise running back. It's a player that you basically build an offense around, as opposed to you just fill in a gap. I think the Ravens in the last couple of years, Ray Rice was a franchise running back. I think in Seattle, Marshawn Lynch is a franchise running back. I think in San Francisco, Frank Gore is a franchise running back. But I don't think that they're as common as they used to be. I think that in the past, the best athletes would be shifted towards running back. I think that the best athletes in this day and age are more diversified in terms of what position they end up at. So in running back, you get a particular skill set, usually a smaller guy who's quicker and shifty, as opposed to whoever's there. You're not going to see those 6'3", 6'4" guys, because they're going to be at move towards wide receiver, or maybe, depending on their skill set or their size, they could be other positions. Our final double question comes from Sam in Minnesota, who asks, which team that missed the playoffs last year is most likely to play their way in this coming season? And what is the best fit for Chris Johnson? Let's do the Chris Johnson ones first. I think that Denver may be the best fit because of how talented they are besides him, and if they can get him at the right price, Denver's going to appreciate getting that kind of value. And they've already lost Knowshon Moreno, so they do need that kind of workhorse back. I know they have a couple guys there that they may be more sold on in the long term, but you want that kind of insurance policy just in case they don't work out. And that's what Knowshon was for them for a while. I think that also the Jets, who Rex Ryan loves to have his running game support the offense, and he hasn't had one the entire time he's been there. He has to be frustrated by that. If he thinks he can get that kind of 2,000-yard season out of Chris Johnson, then that absolutely has to be a place for him. I'm not sure that he'll be sold on that, and it might be easier to get a running back in the draft that way, but they should probably at least take a look at him and see what they can get. I would also say the Rams might even want to take a look at him simply because they've tried a lot of their running backs and have not gotten a lot of production out of them. If they could get somebody for Sam Bradford to rely on in terms of the running game, I think that team would be exponentially better than it is right now. When it comes to the playoffs last year, the team that's most talented that didn't make the playoffs has to be Tampa Bay. And with Lovie Smith at the helm, I'm a big fan of his. I think that that's a team that could potentially make that jump, particularly with the Carolina Panthers making the kind of questionable decisions they are making, and the Falcons. We're going to see which kind of Falcons team it is in terms of whether it's the high-flying NFC Championship Falcons or if it's the we have no running game and no defense Falcons. The Saints are probably going to be there, but at least Tampa Bay has the talent to compete in that division. I would say that the AFC North is wide open. The Browns have one of the more talented rosters in that division, so if they can get the quarterback position handled, they have the potential to take it. I'm not sold on Andy Dalton. I'm not sold on the Bengals at all. They continue to kind of be that team that wins, but it's kind of in spite of themselves. I think the Steelers and the Ravens are both capable of putting together a 12-win season, and they're both equally capable of having a 6-win season. So some of that still has to be decided in terms of the draft, but that's a wide-open division. And depending on how the draft goes, it could easily fall in any of one of four ways. One final team could be the Houston Texans. I think Bill O'Brien is a very capable quarterback developer. So if they can get somebody that they can kind of manage in the same way that Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson, RG3, the way they were all managed and succeeded in their first years, I think the Texans are very capable and very talented. They are probably in one of the weaker divisions if you consider Jacksonville and Tennessee. So their really only competition would be Indianapolis. And I know Andrew Luck's very good, but they still have a lot of questions in their roster in terms of receiving weapons for Andrew Luck, and their defense is okay, improving. So I think that you shouldn't sleep on the Houston Texans again because of one bad year, and it'll depend a lot on who they get as their signal caller. Our last question comes from Dan in Baltimore, who asks, who is the best offensive lineman, and how many do you see going in the first round? I would say that the best one I have right now is Jake Matthews. I understand why people like Greg Robinson. Physically, he's a bear. I mean, you see him put a ton of people on his back, and particularly in the run game, when he puts his hands on you, it's done. But when you look at Jake Matthews, I think he is so polished. He's so technically sound. The man can block. He looks like he's a five-year veteran right now. And I would definitely take him in the top three. I'm not sure I would take Greg Robinson in the top five just because he is raw in a lot of areas, particularly pass protection. And if you're looking in the NFL today, you've got to be able to pass protect. When the Auburn Tigers used him this year, he's almost a glorified guard. They'd line up five linemen wide, and he would crash down on the defensive tackle. They would have the two split back kind of people. They're like fullbacks, tight ends, almost linemen back there. They would handle the exterior pressure of the defensive ends. So he's going to have some transitioning to do in terms of how he blocks and who he blocks. I wouldn't hesitate to take him if you think you can coach him up, and I think the Rams are a legitimate option for him simply because they are strong believers in their ability to coach up offensive linemen, and they have the two guys coming back off injury and questions so that they can kind of wait on him a little bit if they need to. Beyond those two, I think I like Zach Martin next. He's not your prototypical left tackle, but the way he goes about his job is really kind of refreshing to watch. He's technically sound, he's quick, he's nimble, he punches first. He's got good extension. His arms are a little short, so you can see him get beat every now and then on long arm guys. So you'll have to kind of worry about his matchups. But overall, Zach Martin's a good prospect. I think he's going to be really good in the NFL. Taylor Lewan, he's probably a first-round pick. Better in the run game than the pass, but I would think that he's going to fall a little bit, probably mid-20s, just because he should be better than he is at this point. He redshirted 1 year. He's fifth-year senior, I believe, at Michigan. And I think that he's probably going to be a late-round guy that somebody takes in the first. Cyrus Kuangido, I can't even say his name. He is maybe the third or fourth best tackle in his class. The problem with him is there's some really troubling stories about his knee. Vinny Serrato was on The Fan the other day, and he said that an NFL scout told him that he could play a maximum of 2 years, which is really troubling because it determines how you're going to draft him. If you can only have him for about 2 years to coach him, how much can you put into that, and whether or not your medical team thinks you can get more out of that. So if there's a medical staff that thinks you can get 5 to 8 years out of them, you easily take him in the first round because of his talent, because you can get that full first contract out of him, and he'll be playing good probably two years in, something like that. But if you're worried that you can't get that far, he becomes a third or fourth round talent. So there's the potential for a major fall on draft day. So I'm not sure where he goes, but I like his production on field. He looks like a very capable left tackle at the NFL level. At any rate, that'll conclude us for our first 3 and Out podcast. I'm Cole Simmons. Hopefully we'll be back again next week. I haven't decided topics, but I would guess we'll probably look at some defensive since we focused a lot on offense this week. So we might look at linebackers, defensive ends, cornerbacks, something in that ballpark, as well as some more pertinent NFL topics in terms of teams. Maybe we'll evaluate the Jacksonville Jaguars because I really like their offseason they've done thus far. So everyone have a good, safe week, and we will catch you again in 1 week's time.